And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
Luke, today we've managed to get together to examine the very hot topic of how to minimise the tax on the sale of an asset.
Yes.
This is a hot topic right now, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. And I think, you know, we spoke last week about negative gearing and the potential legislation changes that were put forward there. And that then caused a lot of queries and questions this week about, well, if I do need to dispose of an asset because for whatever reason that's not right for me, this has become sort of really sort of front of mind. And I thought we could touch on a few things people can remember to try and make the most of a sale transaction, whether it's a share, a property or a commercial building, anything of a nature. Any time you've made money, people always want to know, okay, how can I keep more of it than give it to the government so they can spend it on stuff we don't need?
Okay then, so where do we start with this one?
All right, so a couple of key things to keep in mind here are you need to consider your situation. Now, what may work for you may not work for someone else. What you've done in the past may not be available to you this time around. And a good example of that is the first one where you want to think about maximising your super contributions in the year of sale. So if we take our investment property, for example, you don't want to be signing a contract, if you can help it, on the 28th of June, because it's the contract date that is the transaction date, not the settlement date.
Okay, that's interesting.
It is, because if you need the proceeds from the sale of that asset to put $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 in the super to get a tax deduction, and you've signed a contract on the 28th of June that settles in September, you've caused yourself a problem you didn't even realise you had. So think about the contract date, or if you do need to sell in that financial year, find another source for maximising contributions. So that's the first thing I'd be looking to do, either using the annual limit, which we know this year is $30,000, or using the catch-up concessional legislation if it's available to you, which means you can look back a maximum of 5 years. So at the moment, you can go back to 2020 and see whatever you haven't used of each of the annual thresholds and then throw that in. Because when you go to sell the asset, we say sale price less purchase price, if we exclude depreciation and all the other tax things, $1 million place, $500,000 purchase price, I've got a $500,000 gain.
Yep.
So we then want to try and use carried forward losses. And then we want to think about taking advantage of a 12-month holding period, because you get a 50% reduction. So if you are going to buy something and you are going to maximize super contributions, think about ensuring you own that asset for at least 12 months so that you can halve the gross gain, which then reduces the amount of tax you will pay. So we've maximized our super contributions. We've held the property for at least 12 months. We then want to think about using carried forward losses. Now, two ways you can use these. Let's say you had a really bad investment back in the day and you did lose some money. You have the right to carry that loss forward for perpetuity. And in this example, you could apply that loss to the gain on this particular investment. And I think that's one that people forget more often than not. And when you do bring it up, they go, oh, yeah, do you know what, about three houses back, blah, 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 blah. Everyone's got a story that goes with it, but there was a loss there. Okay, great. As long as it's in the same entity, you can use that to reduce the assessable gain on the sale of the property. So maximize super contributions, hold the asset for more than 12 months, use carried forward losses. Now, another way to think about creating that is, let's say we had a share portfolio and we'd had a couple of investments in our portfolio that have gone against us, and we bought CBA at $146 and it fell to $90. You would then think proactively about looking in the portfolio for positions like that and say, wow, there's a $50 loss per share. If I sell that, stay out of the market for a little while and buy it back, I can lock in that loss and then use it to offset the gain on the sale of that investment property. So we're not just talking about carried forward losses from the past. You want to be thinking proactively. If we see a dip in a market and something you hold has gone against you, you can sell it. Great. You've locked in that loss. You can then buy it back. It resets the cost base, and you can hold that in the future if you like the stock. But now we've proactively created another loss that could be used to offset either capital gains on the sale of shares, capital gains on the sale of a house, a commercial. It doesn't matter what you apply it to, but you need those losses in the bin to be able to maximise the return of the asset that you're selling. If we are selling a portfolio of things, another thing to consider is the timing of the sale. If I'm going to sell three properties, I don't want to sell all of them in 12 months. So you might sell one in June. You might sell one in July. New financial year, different tax bracket, different income considerations. You might sell one of those properties after you've retired. If you sell it while you're working, the gain gets added to your income. If you finish at 30 June and then you take tax-free money out of super because you're over 60 and then sell a house in that financial year, not only do you have no other income to increase the tax that's going to be applied, but you also have a $30,000 limit that you're not using because you're not getting superannuation guarantee, which means you could put the full $30,000 in and maximise your deductions from a super perspective there as well. So we want to be thinking about why are we selling it, but then also thinking with the future in mind as to how we can proactively use some of these other tools to be able to make sure that you've got the most out of the asset. Another one people can remember or just keep in mind is that six-year rule in relation to your primary residence. And that allows you to live in a property, move out of it, rent it, and as long as you move back into it within a six-year period, you could have rented that house and declared the income for 5.5 of those years. If you move back in and then sell it again, it's your primary residence. So you don't have a capital gains tax problem to worry about. If you're out of that property for more than 6 years, then it becomes a taxable asset and it's deemed an investment property. But if it's your primary residence, you move out, go wherever you want to go, rent that out for 5 years, for example, then move back into it, you could sell that house and you'll pay no capital gains on that asset. So again, think about that for people that are considering changing the purpose of the dwelling that they had. And I had one this week where they were living in an apartment and they'd had a house in a suburb and they were thinking about getting rid of it and they just didn't want to look after the gardens because the kids had all left.
Yeah.
So they moved into the unit and then thought, well, hang on, I can move back to that house, sell it, pay no tax, and then move somewhere else or use the proceeds to make a super contribution.
Okay.
So it's important to keep things in context, but to look at things holistically.
Yeah. That's an interesting one, isn't it? I didn't know that. That six-year rule, that's a new one on me.
It's a cracker.
So hypothetically, I could go back to Queensland within that six-year period, boot out my tenant, move back in, and then do I have to hold it for any particular length of time after that before I sell it?
Oh, look, I don't think there's anything written in stone, but again, as long as the intention is that it's become your primary residence again, you can sell it and pay no capital gains tax.
Or I could stay there for a period of time and then move out again and rent it out again.
Play the game
again. And reset the six-year clock.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. How long do I have to stay there in order to...
Well, again, I think my measure for most of these things is what's fair and reasonable and is the intent correct?
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything ironclad in the legislation that, again, some good tax advice here is probably appropriate. But it's really important that all we've illustrated here today is there are five or six really good ways to proactively control the tax you'll pay on a property and make the most of the sale because things are tough, right? And as we said last week, the cost to hold a property in the ACT now is so ridiculously onerous.
Yeah.
And all of the legislation is written for the tenant. The appeal of holding residential property as an asset is becoming more and more difficult to justify in the ACT, why a lot of people are going to Googong and New South Wales because of the land tax issues that we've got. So you want to make the most of these types of strategies because of the pain and suffering that you've had to endure as the property owner over the life of the asset that you've held. One more to think about, again, in conjunction with good tax advice, is remember that if you've been claiming depreciation over the life of the asset, you've been getting income deductions and income benefit, and the ATO doesn't just say, oh, Leon, you can have those for free. Far from it. What they turn around and do is, in our example before, we said $500,000 purchase price, $1 million sale. If your accountant's working out the numbers and they apply the depreciation that you've had the income benefit from, it reduces your cost base. So if you've had $100,000 of depreciation, your purchase price isn't 500 grand, it's 400 grand. So it increases the capital sale of the capital position of the property. Because,
right.
Because you've had the income tax deductions along the journey.
Right.
And the ATO go, well, we're not going to give you a deduction without getting a plan to flesh on the way out.
Right.
And the way they get their flesh is they reduce your cost base, which increases the capital gain in that example from 500 to 600,000. So, you know, some of the strategies we've pointed out today is just be aware of them. Some might be applicable, some might not. But get some good tax advice. And I say to anybody, understand the implications before you commit to the transaction, because you would hate to miss out on some benefits because of that initial timing example we spoke about at the start, or you didn't have the funds to make the catch-up rules, or you put a contribution in thinking you were doing the right thing to super, but you pushed your balance over 500,000, which precluded you from using the catch-up legislation. So they start to dovetail into each other. And you need to be prepared and organised. You don't want to be committing to the sale of a property off the cuff, because you could cost yourself a lot of money.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a lot to consider. And, of course, one of the key pieces of advice is get some tax advice from a professional tax advisor.
Yeah, look, very much so. I think there are a number of occasions when a good accountant really adds some value to a transaction, you know. And a lot of people look at an accountant and go, well, I'll give you the numbers, you give them back to me. Yep. And some accountants operate like that. But the good ones out there are proactive, and they are thinking outside the box, and they'll have the records in their system, you know, because they've been doing your tax for a number of years, and you'll be able to work with them to maximise the return that you can get from the sale of an asset.
Okay, yeah, can't overstate the importance of good tax advice. The one that really kind of surprises me just a little bit is the idea of deliberately selling an asset, like a parcel of shares, for example, to deliberately crystallise a loss. Mm. That sends a shiver down my spine. I don't like the idea of deliberately making a loss.
Yeah, but you're making a loss to then buy it back and hold it forever. So we're not saying sell it and don't hold the asset. If you like the asset, buy it back and play the game, because I know we pay far too much tax for far too many reasons for far too many things. And if we can claw one or two wins back as the broader populace, hey, let's do it.
Just my luck, though, the price will go up before I can buy it back. That's the
you know what? Buy it back in another entity the very next day. But there's another whole argument whether something is right or wrong. So.
Okay, another way of approaching the argument. More than one way to skin a cat, they say. Although I don't think we like skinning cats anymore. That's
no, we've got to pat the cat.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's more than one way to pat the cat. It's about 11 minutes to 5 now. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio today. We're asking the question, how can we minimise the tax on the sale of an asset? So at this point in proceedings, Luke, what are the key things people can do to limit the tax they need to pay?
Yeah, so the first one would be, you know, carry forward losses if you have them. If you haven't created them, look and see over the course of a year. Don't worry if your share portfolio comes off. If you're going to sell something, have a smile on your face, because you know that you can create some losses in the entity that you're selling the asset. You can't take a loss from one entity to another. So if you've got a loss in your wife's name and the house is in your name, then you can't share that. But if I've got a house in my name or a house is owned jointly and we sell shares jointly, then that's in the same structure.
Or if you run your own business and you have a company structure and the company owns the asset, you can't use it for your personal
family
use.
Trust, same scenario. So keep it to the entity. Create the losses if you can. Use carried forward losses. If you need the money from the sale to consider other strategies like catch-up concessional contributions or annual deductible limits or anything of that nature, don't sign the contract on the 29th of June. Try and sell it in April, get it to settle in May, you've got the proceeds, then you can put the money into super, claim a massive tax deduction, and then have the deduction in the year of sale. You can't sell something in June and then do a massive contribution in July and say, oh, can I apply it to that financial year? It needs to be in the same financial year. With that in mind, buy things in the right entity out of the gate. So again, get some good tax advice and plan your strategy. Am I holding this short term, long term? Am I holding it in a super fund? Great entity, because the tax paid in a pension is zero. So if you're thinking about a long term holding and say, well, I'll sell this asset when I retire, can I buy it in my super fund? Because a pension is a tax free entity and we don't have any tax to pay in pension phase. So buy an entity or buy an asset in the right entity at the start, because a family trust or joint names can let you spread the capital gain. Whereas some accountants go, oh, she's earning more than you, so we'll buy it in her name. But then when you sell it in 15 years, she gets smashed with all the gain when you could have used two marginal tax rates if it's jointly owned. So buy it in the right entity. Maximize your deductions. Use pension payments as a funding mechanism for contributions if you cannot get the proceeds. So if you do have to sell on the 20th of June, think about using pension money, if it's available to you, depending on age, to fund contributions in that year. And I'm just pointing that out. Think outside the box, okay? You get very few opportunities to minimize the tax on assets, and you've probably suffered a fair bit along the holding journey, whether it's a tenant, a market, volatility, or anything else. Hold the asset for more than 12 months if you can. That will give you a 50% deduction on the gross gain that's there. And I think lastly, get some good tax advice well in advance of the transaction so that you have both the timing and the execution covered leading into specific trigger dates that are associated with that asset. And this is where a good accountant can really, really add some value and get you thinking about things that you may not have even considered, especially for the self-employed where you may have income losses or revenue losses that may be able to be applied. A good tax accountant here is worth their weight in gold to get the most out of the transaction, because that will then parlay into potentially a super contribution or the repayment of a non-deductible debt to get you in a better equity position. So all of these things start to dovetail into each other. And I think the message here is be prepared, be organized, and explore every avenue that's available to you, because it may change your behavior for other strategies in the year of sale.
All right, Luca, we've got to the point where I need to ask you, where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, office number 6260-4749. I think we've got some spots left in December leading into the end of the year. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. We've got the strategy stacker, Luke Talks Money, on iTunes and Spotify. We've got the YouTube channel, Envision Financial Canberra, so you can watch the shows there and subscribe and get the views up on that, because last week's show was very topical. We've got the TikTok handle, the Strategy Stacker, and all of these types of strategies are in Smart Money Strategy, your ultimate guide to financial planning, in all good bookstores and Amazon.
Fantastic. Luke, thanks very much for coming in.
We'll see you in a few weeks.
Well, yes, you'll see me in a couple of weeks, but you'll be back again Friday afternoon next week with Nicole. Thanks very much. See Luke Smith from Envision Financial on 2CC, back again next Friday at the same time to talk money matters once again. News is next.